You are about to listen to an episode of The Cypher before it was The Cypher. For our first 75 episodes, we were known as Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, and we had a slightly different format. In all honesty, our production value and sound quality today is much improved from these early episodes. That said, the content is so great that these shows are a valuable part of our archive. If you want more information about our transition, make sure to check out episode 76 with Ritz, which was our first one under the new name. To keep up to date on everything involving The Cypher, visit us online at thecyphershow.com or find us on iTunes. And now, without further ado, here's The Cypher before The Cypher. Welcome to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, a weekly series that brings you exclusive, in-depth conversations with some of the most interesting and exciting figures in hip-hop. We're brought to you by RapGenius.com, your source on the internet for decoding, annotating, and analyzing rap lyrics. I'm your host, Same Old Sean. This week, we sit down with Brother Ali. Ali, whose new album, Morning in America and Dreaming in Color, comes out this week, has long been one of our favorite artists. His fantastic rhyming skills are matched by lyrics that are both intensely engaged with the larger world, as well as by a sense of humanity and empathy that is all too rare amongst artists of any kind. Then, after our talk with Ali, we have a short but revealing chat with Miss Hayes of the Bay Area group 40 Love. The innovative group meshes dreamy electronic production with smart, positive lyrics to create an ode to dreams and their possibilities. We talk to Miss Hayes about chanting for world peace, alchemy, and why she loves the Bay. But first, here's our talk with Brother Ali. We met with him at the Warner Brothers office in Manhattan and began by asking about his tendency to create fully drawn characterizations of the type of folks most rappers would reduce to punchlines. So I wanted to start by talking about something which I got into a little bit off camera that's such, to me, such an important part of your writing, which is your sense of empathy. Mm. Whether it's for, you know, in your song about slavery, the oppressor class, for enemy soldiers, for your ex-wife, for groupies at shows, for whomever, mm-hmm. you always really paint a full and sympathetic view of characters who, in a lot of hip-hop songs, are just the one-dimensional villain. Mm. Why do you do that, and how do you do that?
Well, I was forced to see the world through a really kind of unique lens early on, just because obviously I'm albino and look different. And so I you know, come from a white family, and we moved a lot. And so, you know, we lived in a lot of different situations. There were times where we were really poor and lived in really messed up neighborhoods, economically messed up neighborhoods, but I felt like really spiritually and socially rich neighborhoods. And then we lived in like really wealthy neighborhoods that were emotionally and socially kind of bankrupt, you know.
Yeah.
So I got to live in a lot of different situations. You know, obviously, like I said, my family is white, but I was outcasted when I was a little kid. And I had, you know, elders and peers and friends and enemies, and basically all of the key people in my life as a little kid were all black. Mm. And so I just kind of had this, you know, experience. And so, you know, and then, you know, growing and learning from that kind of being my starting point, mm-hmm. To really feeling, you know, that connection to that struggle, and then seeing how that struggle spread out the whole, you know, diaspora of African people, but then you know, oppressed, struggling people fighting to affirm their humanity. Because I basically had to say, you know, I'm not just somebody for you to make fun of. I'm not just a mascot for you to fuck with. Right. I'm a human being, you know. So I had to affirm my own humanity at all times, and I had to learn how to love myself, and I had to learn how to think I was valuable and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was primarily black wisdom and love that taught me that. Nobody owns love or wisdom, but you know, there's a very distinct and unique quality to black love and wisdom that mm-hmm. Is what gave me the strength and courage and wisdom and motivation to do what I do. And so I've always been forced to see the world through different eyes. You know what I mean? Because yeah. there's not an albino community. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's just, you know, except for maybe in like East Africa, like the highest concentration of our, they say they think that the gene comes from East Africa, mm-hmm. but I'm pretty sure all genes come from East Africa. But so the closer you get to East Africa, the higher concentration of albinos there are.
Right.
And in East Africa, there's a lot, you know what I mean? Like relative to the rest of the world. So, you know, it's not like I had an easy category that I could just get in because I didn't fit in anything, you know. So, and I think a lot of people who kind of have a similar experience of needing to search to find themselves that, mm-hmm. you know, there's not some group to just join and then they fill in the blanks for me. Right. I think everybody that has that experience has a similar kind of, you know, we recognize in other people the need to affirm the fact that we're important.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. On Take Me Home, you mentioned hope in one of the notes you did for Rap Genius.
Yeah.
And on Take Me Home, you have that rhyme, you say, you know, the king of where poor folks reside, because every time I speak, it's hope vocalized.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to be, like, really central to everything you're doing,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's a very different vision of ghetto life than a lot of rappers. It seems closer to someone like a Marvin Gaye or a Donny Hathaway, that kind of soul singer, 60s, 70s vibe, where it's very focused on love and transcendence in hard times more than strict description of,
right.
you know, what I see outside my window or whatever. What connection do you feel to the work of folks like that, of like Gaye and Hathaway?
Oh,
and
those are my favorite. Those are my favorite people of all time, you know,
yeah.
And Nina Simone and a few others. But I think the reason that I got that is because I was, you know, in it and out of it. Like, I wasn't just trapped in it, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, you know, when you go, it's kind of like if you're from the city and you go visit your grandparents for the summers in the country,
yeah.
you know what I mean? You're just like, man, there's crickets and there's birds. And it's like, yeah, like that's just so normal to them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, it, you know, if you split your time between the city and the country, you have that feeling of, like, you might appreciate it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of had that with, you know, the hood or whatever you want to call it, where I lived half of my life there and then half of my life in suburbs or in other, you know, just not those type of places, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think I appreciate them in a certain way. And, you know, but yeah, it's in terms of like Donnie and Marvin and Nina and those people, I discovered them through rap music. Like, hip-hop really kept, particularly my generation, like our generation, like really connected to the music that came before it,
mm-hmm.
because they were sampling, a lot of the great producers, they inherited their parents' record collections.
Right.
So like this whole legacy of music was handed down a generation and then sampled. And then we wanted to know, where does this sample come from? And so we start, you know, hearing all of this music from a generation before, and we loved and respected it. That was part of hip-hop to us,
yeah.
was to love and respect the music that came before. We'd be like, oh, that's old school. Like, old school used to be a positive thing.
Right.
When you'd be like, I got them old school records, like, oh, yeah, like, this is the real shit.
You yeah, know? Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's not as much like that, but in the early hip-hop time, that's part of what it was about.
Excellent. Speaking of, you know, old school black music and black culture, and One More Hit, you talk about the mainstream's relationship to black culture, right? And these phases. First, they're dismissive, then they're fascinated, and then it's sort of a total, like, let's just exploit it and hollow it out and,
right.
and you know, and well, leave with nothing.
More than even dismissive is that we, you know, demonize and vilify that stuff.
Yeah.
That's kind of where it starts, because we're terrified of it.
Right.
We're terrified that, you know, like I said, human nature too naked. This is too raw. You know what I mean?
Can hip-hop avoid that third phase where it's just sort of so commercialized and kind of left with nothing? Is it kind of too late to stop that?
The good thing about hip-hop to me is that hip-hop on its own got popular when it was still primarily a black art form. Whereas with every other form of music, the dominant mainstream, you know, culture was able to steal it and put a white face on it before mm-hmm. black people got a chance to
right.
to do it, do the real version of it.
Right. In jazz, the guy's name was literally Paul Whiteman, not to put
too fine a point
on it.
Yep. Exactly. And, you know, so I think that part was really good. You know, still hip-hop gave up its power to big corporations. But I think we're seeing that start to be taken back now. And I think that Kanye West and the people that you know, the generation that grew up inspired by him, mm-hmm. I think he's been amazing for that, because he's so connected to everything, you know, to all these different parts of expression of oppressed people in America, particularly Black people. You know, that he's really smart. He has political ideas. You know, he also is connected to street life. He's not, you know, he's not the trigger man. He's not the dude, you know, selling, pushing weight or whatever. But he's connected to that and understands it. And he sounds right at home next to Young Jeezy or Pusha T. He sounds right at home next to Mos Def or Talib Kweli. You know, he kind of is all of the above. And so the people that are inspired by him, like the Kendrick Lamars of the world, you hear them, you know, talking about partying, talking about the nice things they like, talking about, you know, hanging out with girls, but then also talking about, what is my generation? What does it mean? What's this world that we inherited? What are we supposed to do with it? Who are we?
Yeah.
You know, asking these bigger questions. And so I think it's in a great place. And somebody like him doesn't necessarily need the industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's doing a big record now, because he's choosing to, you know what I mean? And if it works out good, then maybe he'll stay there. If not, he can go right back to where he was. He's actually in a really, really powerful, unprecedentedly powerful situation for a young guy like him to be in.
Excellent. There was something in your song, Tightrope, there was something I always wondered about it. You talk about a child's problems and his family's problems, adjusting to his homosexuality that he's just discovering, and his family obviously is not in favor of it. You end that song with the phrase, shame on us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering who the us was here. Is it, you know, hip-hop or society or
the
people
above,
listening to the record?
All of the above, including myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up not knowing anybody that was openly gay, not being close to anybody, and I didn't have a particular hatred for gay people, I didn't think, but I didn't care about them enough to care about their situation or try to understand or anything like that. And so, you know, on my first album that I'm otherwise really proud of, Shadows in the Sun, I said that F word a couple times, not even referring to them specifically. Again, that's what I thought, you know what I mean?
Right.
I didn't realize, I wasn't, you know, informed enough or probably caring enough to know that saying that word as a synonym for weak or whatever adds to this big kind of cultural narrative that it's okay, that they aren't valuable and all that other stuff, and that they can be targeted and you know, tortured and killed and pushed to suicide and all other type of horrible stuff. So in a way, that was me, you know, just taking responsibility for the fact that I've been part of that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, we as a society are part of that problem. There are more and more people that are becoming more outspoken, and I think that that's going in a good direction. There are also some extremes, you know. Anytime you create an extreme, you also create an extreme response.
Right.
And so I think there are extremes on both sides. But the reality, and all I need to know, all I feel like I need to understand, and what we all need to understand, is that human beings are qualified for a certain level of dignity and respect just based on the fact that they're human. And anything that we don't understand, you know, there needs to, we need to space where we don't have to fully understand or identify with somebody to still recognize them as being valuable.
Right. I wanted to take a little bit of time to talk about the new record, Morning in America and Dreaming in Color. Seems like you put a lot of thought into sequencing your records.
Yeah.
The Undisputed Truth, for example, you know, it goes through your problems with your wife, your divorce, and finally on Ear to Ear, it ends with you happy and in love and triumphant.
Mm-hmm.
What's the story you're trying to tell on Morning in America?
Man, thanks for noticing that, man. I feel like people, that's one of those things that people get the sense of it by listening to an album, like, this is a good album, but don't really always consciously understand why.
Yeah.
The story I'm telling with this one is, it originally was going to be two separate albums. I was like, I'm making an album called Morning in America, and I'm gonna talk about how terrible things are. I'm gonna speak from my own rage and anger about what's going on, and also, you know, tie in the other people that are suffering and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I kind of had this transformative experience working with kids and working in activism and seeing new things that I've never seen before in activism and I said, you know, we know the world's bad. I need to focus on, you know, the possibilities, dreaming in color.
Yeah.
So after working on it for a while, I realized it's really, it has to be both. Mm-hmm. And what I believe to be, you know, in that sentence, Morning in America, Dreaming in Color, I believe is where we're at exactly, where things are really bad for people across the board. The way that we get, the way that it's shown, you know, just because it's easy to quantify as money, economics are bad. But when economics sits at the center of a society, that affects every part of our lives. So spiritually, our health, our relationships, our marriages, our families, our schools, every institution, every big part of our life is crumbling, decaying, is doing really bad. So, but things are so bad that people who used to live in this kind of entitlement bubble, that bubble's kind of burst on them, and they're realizing that those people's problems can be my problems too. Yeah. And so the solutions are starting to seem like group solutions now. Whereas I believe that these problems were caused by separating people on every point of identity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that there is a lot of new opportunity that's never existed. There's suffering on a broader scale than I've seen in a very long time, but there's also opportunity. And in some of the activism work that I do, primarily with Occupy Homes, mm-hmm. You know, had this problem in the for black and brown communities where they were targeted by banks, you know, housing discrimination and redlining,
right,
and stuff like that.
Robo signing and all that kind of,
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. So a lot of times those communities didn't have that kind of like generational understanding of how, you know, mortgages work. So banks were targeting them, saying we're going to give them bad mortgages that we know they can't stay in. So they're going to, you know, give us 7-8 years of payments and then we'll just foreclose, keep the payments, resell the house. You know, it destroys their life, but, you know, nobody cares about them because they're black and brown, and it'll work. And for about 10 years, that's exactly what they did.
Right.
But, you know, greed can't just leave well enough alone, like I said on my album. So they expanded that program to everybody. And when they did that, they really kicked a hornet's nest. And I've seen, you know, more and more white middle-class, middle-aged people from the suburbs who their sister is losing her home, or they lost their home,
yeah.
And now they're coming to the hood, literally coming to the hood and occupying homes of black and brown people, you know, school teachers from the suburbs,
yeah.
You know, going to jail for people, you know, to say, we're going to put pressure on the banks, we're not going to let you just take this house, we're going to make a story out of this. I've never seen that. You know, we read about it, and, you know, we know the book you gave me, and we know that, I was just reading this long article about a white woman who was killed by the Ku Klux Klan,
mm-hmm.
in the Freedom Rides.
Yeah. Violet? No, I'm thinking of someone else.
But. Yeah, but yeah. And I read about things like that. I heard about things like that, but I've never seen that in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen an example of that,
right.
With very, very few exceptions. Tim Wise and, you know.
Yeah, you shout out Tim Wise on the new record.
Yeah, I love Tim Wise. but, you know, I'm seeing that for the first time in my life. So, mm-hmm. So in my eyes, you know, we have a really terrible situation that we need to be talking about. And, you know, we also have huge opportunities that match that.
Excellent. So I kind of wanted to wind down and just ask you real quick on Stop the Press. You talk about your trip to Mecca and how that refocused you on your career and on your work. I was hoping you could go into that a little bit.
Well, I think the main thing that did is just it really made very real and plain to me exactly who I am, what kind of man I'm supposed to be, why I'm here, what my job in this world is. Any kind of doubt or insecurity I had or you know, indecision that I had about those kind of things or question marks all went away when I made that trip. And I think a lot of people have that experience. And the other thing is that, and I didn't mention it on that record because it was still kind of happening when I was writing it, but I had a friend that I went on Hajj with who was a jazz musician from Oakland, who originally was from Chicago, had an incredible career, played with Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Wonder and all kind of people. And he was 70 when we went on Hajj together. And we became dear, dear friends over that month traveling together and, you know, physical challenges and all this kind of stuff. He was going through cancer, and obviously I have my own physical limitations. But he passed away not long after we got, maybe about a year after we got home from Hajj. But he said, you know, you know, I'm in my early 30s, and he was like, young man, I was you a half hour ago. You know what I mean? My 30s feel like I took a nap and I woke up and I was 70 and my life is almost done, you know. And he really impressed on me, don't waste any time. You know what you're supposed to do. You know who you are. You know what your job is. Just get busy doing it. Don't question it. Don't worry if people like it or don't like it. You know, and I already had that thread in me anyway. Right. But it just made it that much more plain, you know what I mean, that I was given a really unique set of circumstances and unique opportunities to see things and do things and learn things and experience things and feel things. And, you know, I'm pretty good at making music. And so I have to say what I need to say in the way that I need to say it and not worry about, you know, I could have, that song Stop the Press, I talk about all those personal things. Yeah. Each one of those things, and, you know, 5 years ago would have been a song. So I made a song about my dad committing suicide, song about my friend Idea dying, song about my relationship, song about Hajj, song about my kids. So make a very personal album, put it out. My fans would have ate it up. You know what I mean? It's a no-brainer. I know I'm going to sell what I always sell. This is the album I made now is a lot more challenging. And, you know, the people at the Rhymeshares label are great. And so they were like, man, you do what you feel you need to do. We got your back. Just do it very well. You know, but I'm challenging people and it's uncomfortable and people don't like to listen to message music now. So I don't know how it's going to do. I don't know. I had a fan that just got back. He's been a fan. Like, I recognize him when I see him on Facebook. Yeah. Like, he's checked in a bunch of times throughout the years. He just got back from Afghanistan, and he said he bought a ticket to one of my shows so that he can come in and kick my ass at the show for praying on the American flag. You know, so I know that that's a reality, you know. But that trip made me realize that I don't have a lot of time, and I don't have time to waste, you know, apologizing for what I think, or, you know what, yeah, I mean? I just have to go for it.
That's incredible. I actually just yesterday talked to Trisha Rose. I don't know if you know who she is. A professor at Brown who wrote a book called Black Noise, sort of the first scholarly work on hip-hop.
Yeah.
And she was talking about the amount of stories in hip-hop and how limited they are. And, you know, people always ask her, well, you know, is gangster okay? And she said, well, it's fine, but how about making it a quarter of what people talk about? And I really feel like this record and in your career in general is focused on expanding that range of things to talk about and subject matter. And thank you for that.
Thank you. Thanks for paying attention.
Yeah, definitely. So
I love, because, you know, you put a lot of work into stuff that the average listener, passive listener, doesn't catch.
Right.
So when somebody like really smart or really gets it, that's really tight.
Yeah. Well, we could talk all day, but unfortunately, we have to get going. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We appreciate it, Brother Ali. Outside the Lines with Rap Genius.
Rap Genius, me. This guy's a rap genius.
We'll be right back with our chat with Miss Hayes of 40 Love. You're listening to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. Welcome back to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. I'm your host, Same Old Sean. On the second half of the show, we talked to Miss Hayes of 40 Love. We began by asking the MC about how the Bay Area rap scene influenced her style, as she sounds quite unlike traditional Bay Area rappers like E-40, Sugar T, and Boots Riley.
I feel like the Bay Area has had a huge impact, like, just on everything growing up, just, even just in the cast where I grew up there a little bit. I grew up, like, across the street from a hospice, a park, a school, and a church, like, on one block. So wow. It was just, it's just hell of, like, crazy packed kind of community. And it's really, like, I mean, a bunch of my music is based in, like, love and just kind of, like, humanitarian ideals and stuff. And a lot of that does come from the Bay and, like, this big Frisco Natives, like, community that kind of has changed a lot, because there is a lot of, like, new people coming into the city and stuff, but at the same time, it's, like, super, like, deep-rooted kind of love mentality out there. And we do have kind of, like, the base flag, like, the E-40, like, and also, like, you know, someone like Boots Riley, the whole, like, political influence is really big, too. But I try to take kind of, like, trying to create a new lane in that, too, so.
Yeah, definitely.
You mentioned, you know, having the sort of love and positivity thing, and the record definitely has a lot of that, you know, inspirational kind of vibe to it, mm-hmm. right? The whole thing, we must envision the future for it to rise and all that kind of stuff. That's really not that typical in rap generally. Why, where'd that come from?
From like a lot of different places, but all the members of the crew we practice nature and Buddhism, which basically is based on the Lotus Sutra. And, I could go into a lot of detail, but basically it's about, chanting for world peace, which is Kozen Rufu, through, human transformation, human revolution, and basically approaching every soul with that respect of their inherent value. So it's kind of based within that, and kind of like I really do believe that I'm actually exploring a bunch of different art forms right now and really into like multidimensional art. But it's kind of through, I guess artists have the power to like shift that paradigm, I really do believe. So I'm trying to use it as like a tool for that and still exploring ways to do that.
Awesome. What are the other kinds of art that you're exploring now? And some of the other dimensions of the
yeah, so I've like had tons of fun like producing videos like the Rack City, just like kind of conceptualizing videos like that. I'm working on a webisode series with my arts collective right now, that's based on alchemy, and it's kind of like Elizabethan but really funny with like modern references and super symbolic, steeped, and it's also can be translated through like theater and performance art. So it's like really experimental, but I'm just kind of trying, I'm testing out kind of new stuff like that, and also working on some solo music and also like different collaborations and stuff too.
Okay. Now the music's not all sweetness and light. So like About to Bloom has some kind of dark imagery going on in it.
A word.
Yeah. What were you thinking about when you kind of wrote, you know, that stuff?
Different things. Like, I kind of believe that, I'm on one, just so you know. So, like, I believe, like, it's kind of like, there's kind of like, well, okay, so something that I've been studying in alchemy is, like, basically like the music of the spheres, like spheres emit like a note, right? Mm. And so we want to like align those notes within our life, and they're all
Scriabin was really into that, the Russian composer. He believed that really strongly. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. I should look into it.
Yeah.
But that's what's up. But yeah, so kind of like a lot of like symbols that reoccur in our life can have meaning, and if we really look into that, that's how we create like these beautiful kind of symphonies of our life and stuff. And so some of the symbols kind of just like come to me. I really do try to like be a vessel sometimes like for it, but in that one I was kind of just thinking of like the phoenix rising, just like ugh, just like I don't care, you know, just like that raw kind of energy. But
okay, yeah. Awesome. And on the musical side of things, there were a couple of things I noticed. First was the heavy kind of dance and electronic music influence, in addition to, you know, sort of hip hop drums and stuff like that. Who on that end of things, on the kind of dance music stuff, has been influential to you?
Mikos is our producer, so he's like incredible, and he is influenced by tons of different people. I love just the super bass, like Chicago kind of style stuff, and also just, you know, people like Diplo, producers like Hudson Mohawk, like all these heads that are like doing it right now and stuff. And even like current people like Santa Gold and stuff, like I just love the way she's kind of melding genres. And another person that I'm kind of influenced by is Bjork, even though she's not on like the dance level, but kind of just like the experimental level too. But I'm actually trying to get more into like electro and really dance kind of stuff, because like that's one thing that I was when we went to like Europe, we just went to Sonar and had a couple opportunities to perform, but I really want to do that more. So it's one of my goals, and just like the live aspect and just getting people to move and just break through to their kind of like animal is like, yeah, I love that.
Nice. So speaking of the live thing, one of the things you guys do, I know a lot of the music is you know, keyboards and sort of program based, but you also work with live musicians a lot.
Yeah, we have.
What does that add to what
you're doing? I love it. We work with The Park. And do you know The Park?
No, I don't.
They work with like Alice Russell, Wallpaper, Durando, different people, and they are incredible. They're also like Bay community, like we all kind of grew up doing like Wednesday night sessions where it'd be them playing live, and every just all the MCs in the city would just come freestyle, and it was like super organic. And now they're doing really big stuff. And so they've been incredible to work with. We've messed with like Bayonix and stuff. But yeah, I would love to do that more. So even just like we've had shows where we've incorporated like a drummer, mm-hmm. like, and it adds a ton to the show. So I definitely want to do that more.
Nice.
But and then Miles is getting more up on his NPC game too. So I'm kind of have, you know, because like Exile is super dope. He's a homie too. And yeah, I'm like, dude, Miles, come on. Let me know, because, yeah, he's about to be, he's, like, stepping up his game with the live NPC shit, too. So.
Nice. Excellent. Yeah. And you mentioned Animal Natures a second ago, and, of course, the press photo that I saw is the animal masks.
Mm-hmm.
What's the deal with that?
That's kind of, yeah, the same thing, yeah. And also kind of just, like, the dream world, mm-hmm. and just kind of the symbols of trying to, like, I mean, yeah, like, the mission statement of the album, I guess, was kind of just, like, using vision to transform reality, using mm-hmm. dreams, like, and that power, because, like, I feel like we don't use the full potential of our minds, like, and there's so much power within our minds and through, like, all these imagery and stuff like that, you know, to, like, create new, like, landscapes here and, like, through dialogue and through all this stuff, so, yeah, I think it was just, like, a fun kind of dreamscape that we did.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, lyrically, one of the things I noticed is you guys, you know, you have the surreal sort of dreamlike element, but it also doesn't stray too far from, you know, you'll have the kind of braggadocio kind of stuff just to keep it hip-hop in a way, you know, just to, so it sounds a little familiar to people. Is that, mm-hmm. do you think about these kind of balances when you're writing? Like, oh, let's not go too far over here or, mm. or too far into the bragging thing or... It's just kind of come out
naturally. I think that was kind of like, I guess, natural because like just the place where this album was like in our progression was kind of just like where we were at. It was kind of just like exploring like, I don't know, like ourselves as artists and stuff like Geoff and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But right now I'm kind of trying to venture into the more like just going all the way with like stuff like that. So I'm kind of excited about that. But yeah, it's always going to be like, gotta let them know that we're the sickest, though, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Definitely. And you and Geoff have very different voices, very different styles. How do you figure out who's rapping when on what song, what verse?
That's, like, pretty organic, too. Like, it's just, like, the studio vibes and just hours in the lab, you know what I mean? And just working out what fits and... Yeah.
Nice. He seems, perhaps you are as well, comes through definitely in his lyrics, very into like the sort of early mid-90s classic hip-hop thing. You
yes.
know, he shouts out, you know.
Yes.
Illmatic in particular seems to be. And,
it's his
and,
favorite album.
Yeah. What is it about that? I mean, do you know like what about that record as opposed to like Cuban Links or Ready to Die or any sort of other comparably classic thing?
Uh-huh.
Do you know like what it is about that?
Well,
record.
You know how, like, some people, there's, like, a superhero MC for everyone, I feel like, you know, Weezy, he could be mine, I don't know, this is definitely, like, that for Geoff, and I just think he was, like, oh, you know, the 10 tracks, like, everything is perfect, everything is aligned, like, he's, like, a super head, like, he grew up working at Amoeba. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's seen every single album cover, every single thing, and then he moved into working at Ohm Records. Now he works at IOTA, mm-hmm. which is digital distribution. So he's just like ahead. So I don't know. It's through all his like crazy like that's just what he like rationalizes like the best album. I don't know.
And you guys really have awesome videos. I noticed the Bow to Bloom video, the little I guess you know Pulp Fiction homage there at the end.
Yes,
that was kind of cool.
Yeah, my girl Nina Reyes Rosenberg has been incredible to work. I love working with her. Her aesthetic is just really amazing. She is, like, she also fuses, like, kind of different cultures. Like, she's Mexican and Jewish, and she, like, has a very, like, feminine eye, but at the same time just super bright and, like, I don't know. She has a really dope vision. So that was kind of her vision, the Miami video. And then we collabed on the Rack City vision. And we'll definitely be working together more in the future. She's working on actually 2 feature films right now that look really amazing. So, yeah.
Nice. And I definitely got a bit of jazz influence in the work as well. It's kind of 50s classic Arab jazz. And you actually shout out Around Midnight on one of the tunes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Where is that conscious? You feel that comes in at all? The kind of like, you know, sort of era of you know, Miles and early Coltrane and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, and that's probably where Miles, our producer, he's actually named after Miles Davis.
Oh,
and,
there you go.
So, yeah, he's, like, super influenced by jazz as well.
Excellent. And so this project took a while to make this album, right? The bio said 3 years.
Like 2 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this was like kind of a process because I think for a lot of reasons we were all like doing our own thing and working on like other projects as well and just kind of like figuring out where we wanted to go. Because this is actually like our third album, but we kind of consider it as like our coming out like sure. project and stuff. So it was just a lot of like fine tuning and just like so many songs were cut like from the process, you know what I mean? Like it was a huge body of work.
Yeah, how did it change over that time? Like your vision of the album, the sound of it, whatever.
It did change a lot. I don't know. I just think we were kind of all growing in our own craft. So we just realized that, like, this wasn't what we were ready to put out yet. And we just wanted to keep working.
Okay. Yeah. And, before we kind of get into what's coming up and what's going on now, I need to ask if you could tell me a little about the really great alter ego names from the About to Bloom video.
Yes.
Yours is Carmen Sandiabla.
Yes.
Right?
Carmen Sandiego. I'm just all over the world, but got that. Dark Side, and then
nice.
Sandy Gina is my favorite.
Yeah, that was Sandy Gina, which is Mikos's, and then
yes.
Funky Nuggets was the other one.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, that was great. And yeah. Ebenezer Mongoloid.
Yes.
Nice.
I mean, what more can you say?
Right. Yeah, it's kind of self-explanatory.
Yeah. No, we came up with all that just like in WMC Miami, just like hella playing around because yeah, those dudes are so funny. And Miles is Sandy Gina. Like, if you meet him, you'll just understand. Yeah.
Nice. And so, I know the record came out just, you know, a month ago or so, month or two ago. How's the reception been to it? What's been going on?
Like, to me, it's been really good. We haven't seen the numbers yet, but I've been happy. Just, like, it feels really good to just get the project out there because I am working on a lot of new stuff. So, just kind of, like, since it has been a long process, you know what I mean? Just getting it out, letting people know, like, where we were at, you know what I mean? And, no, but it's been really good so far, and like, I mean, a lot of people, some people, you know, oh, I want to blow up, I want to do this, like, I have my own goals, but I want to, like, really just reach the heads and also just reach, like, people, because, like, my goal really is to, like, through, like, you know, Buddhist, like, to kind of spread the mystic law and these ideals and stuff like that and kind of like awaken people to their potential. So if anyone listening to it like does feel inspired like that, that's gonna be like a victory for me. But yeah,
nice. And now that the record's out, I know you said you're working on solo stuff. Is there any plans for the group? Are you touring or doing shows around the Bay? Or
yeah, we do have a couple shows around the Bay. I'll definitely some stuff is still in the works, and we are also planning a tour that's not finalized yet, so I won't, but I'll
sure.
keep it. Yeah, so but yeah, and I'm working on a solo project as well, and we do have new work as the crew, and then I have a new video that I just shot on my birthday that's going to be coming out by September 4th.
Awesome. For one of the songs on the record, or
no, it's this is new. We are going to have a new video from David Dutton from the video, from the record, which is going to be really sick. Because he utilizes a lot of special effects, so it's really going to help us out with the dreamscape. So I'm super excited for that one, which will be coming up as well. And the one I'm doing is First Since 88, which is my basically Bay family's crew that I grew up with. And yeah, Creative Minds on the Grind is kind of like their thing, and they're all amazing visual artists. So this is just a solo track I did with them. It's kind of about fire and rebirth, and there's a lot of death and like rebirth like imagery in it. And so it was really fun to
awesome.
Shoot.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you real quick about the San Francisco scene. Who you think your sort of peer group is out there? Who you're excited about? Mm-hmm. You know, musically and even like you said, visual in terms of visual art and stuff.
Yeah, well, Since 88 for sure, like visually, and like Chore Boogie and stuff. I don't know if you know him, but there's some, the visual scene is incredible out there. And then, you know, people like The Park and Wallpaper is super coming up right now and stuff too. And let me think about it as far as, I mean, A1 is the homie, and I don't know if you guys know him, but he's like Since 88 too. That's like Since 88's like crew that I rep a lot, and he's doing a great job too. I'm sure I'll think more.
Right, the second this is over, you'll take another 40 names.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. But Los Rakas are killing it too, so yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to let us know about while you're while you're here for the let the Rap Genius folks
hear about? Just look out for me. I'm about to be all over the place. Spreading love.
All right. It's Samuel Chan here with Miss Hayes from 40 Love. Thanks so much for hanging out.
Thank you, guys. All right.
You've been listening to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. Rap Genius is dedicated to decoding, annotating, and analyzing hip-hop lyrics. Join us next week when we talk to poet and musician Saul Williams about the stories behind his genre-busting early work, his problems with post-Biggie hip-hop, his new book Chorus, and more. Outside the Lines with Rap Genius is hosted and written by Sean Sotero, a.k.a. Same Old Sean. To make sure you never miss an episode of the show, please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can reach me with your thoughts about Outside the Lines via Twitter. I'm at Same Old Sean. That's S-H-A-W-N. This podcast was recorded on location by Dan Berger and engineered by Brian Penny at the beautiful Three Egg Studios in Brooklyn, New York. Our show's intern is Sunny Kahara. Intro and outro music by Psionic, interlude music by Sir Loin. I'm your host, Same Old Sean, and I'll see you next week on Outside the Lines with Rap Genius.